This is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Rick McElroy from Carbon Black.
Good to see you again. Always good to see you. Was it just a few months back at Black Hat last time we talked?
It was. One of the things we talked about at Black Hat and we said we needed to talk further on was this challenge of mental health, not just mental health in security, but the fact we're pulling so many members of the armed forces, veterans in. Where are we in the States? Because I'm looking at your suicide rate and it's scary. Yeah.
It's rough right now. It's a little depressing, to tell you the truth. It's an active conversation in the veteran community. Security is having its own conversation because I think there's been a lot of security researchers and hackers along the way and now security professionals. I had a conversation with law enforcement last night. It's going around right now. So I think the community's got to get together. One of the things I was super happy to hear is a former teammate at Carbon Black who's now over at Salesforce, former Marine. He met up with the Mental Health Hacking Group. They've been instrumental, I think, in the hacking community, driving the conversation. They now have a veteran operations wing, bridging that gap between veterans who come out, certainly hosting VetCon and helping my buddies throw that and put that together. This year we had, I don't know, it's probably a couple thousand people in the room. It's an active conversation, and the leaders and those of us who have come out of the service, have done some work, have helped other people, we're just looking to pull that community together. To that point, because I told them I would plug them as well, there's a VetSec group. There's a Slack channel involved with it. I can tell you we have lots of fun. We pick each other up when we need to be dusted off. And I'm surprised it took me that long to find them, but I've been advertising that out because it's a good area to find people who are going through the struggle as well.
It's interesting when you look at this business because we attract so many people who live in different places on the spectrum. We attract so many people who most industry sectors would consider broken in one form or another.
It's so interesting you said that. I just had a really interesting conversation with one of my friends, Karen, over at another magazine. She's been starting to look at like the archetypes that are attracted to security. During the conversation, we really came back, like just realizing how much trauma has gone around, whether that's you go to war, you come back. But it's not just that. All of us had bad childhoods, multiple traumas applied, then things have at conferences. I really like what you hit on there, which is why I wanted to call that out.
One of the things with this is, given that we have all these people, why has it taken so long for people to actually start to openly talk about the mental health challenge?
My personal take on it, I think we like to look good as a species. And I can tell you in California, people really like to look good. So you put that air out there that I'm a leader. You know, you got to lead by example. You got to be perfect. My own personal journey on that has been, I think the more you talk about it, the more you're in front of people talking about it, the way more open people are. And then they go, well, if Chris and Rick and a bunch of other people can do it, then why can't we talk about it too? And so I think it was a bit of that. And then maybe just dealing with our own stuff didn't allow us to go help other people. Yeah, I think we got to stop looking as good and really just realize that like every human being has had some issues to varying degrees, and there's things we can learn from other groups as well too.
One of the UK groups that I come across quite a lot now is Tough Enough to Care, and one of the guys instrumental in that plays rugby with me. Their focus has been, particularly for men, is actually getting people to talk.
In America anyway, one of the big breakthroughs was The Sopranos. The mafia boss, Tony Soprano, actually had a counselor and would go. And then the rise in the number of guys who actually went in for counseling after that went through the roof. You got to go talk to some people. And I always say, like, I'm not an expert at any of this stuff. I just talk to lots of people. Even if it's just reaching out to say, like, I'm having a bad day. Or sometimes you're just around lots of people for sustained periods of time and you need a break. Find some people in your tribe and then invest back. I think that's probably the best thing I could say is just share the pain a little bit.
I think one thing I also like about security is it's a very open tribe. Actually, people don't care what your background is. A lot of the issues we see at the moment in society in terms of gender or race or sexism, everything else, that doesn't often apply in this business.
I love all of us. There's anarchists, there's misfits, there's punks, there's people that flip tables just to do it. And then there's the rest of us. But I think it attracts a certain type. And we just generally, A, have cooler conversations, but B, we're like, get in where you fit in. There's no prereq other than can you do work and are you willing to contribute to the community? And that doesn't have to come from 4 or 8 year education. In fact, most of the people that I know that are good at this had a really hard time with traditional education. That wasn't a viable option for them. They just went out and started doing work. So I don't think that 4 year universities are built for everybody.
Do you think that's one of the reasons why HR teams have such a problem with recruiting people into cybersecurity? Because those school dropouts, who most people would cross the street to avoid, they're the people who are solving problems at 12, 13, 14. They're hacking their PlayStations, their Xboxes. And those innate problem-solving skills are the bits that we miss so badly.
Totally. So over here, Tom Langford, you can go, he's awesome. But he had said for a long time, he just couldn't figure out why he couldn't get red teamers. And then what he figured out is because of those checkboxes, they weren't hiring for the mindset. And so we've been preaching for a number of years, go hire for that mindset. But to your point, how can we fill some of these gaps in non-traditional ways? I think we have to start looking at inner cities. Certainly for myself, because you're poor and you can't buy things, you figure things out. How does this Atari work? How do I get the next game? How do I go get free music? Not to say you should do illegal activity, but like you solve problems because you have to, not because it's an intellectual exercise. And I think that mindset of doing more with less, you're improvise, overcome, and adapt. The Marine Corps, I still tell the story. We had a 50 cal in our armory that was built in 1942. We don't get shiny new objects. We make do with what we have. But I think that sense of accomplish the mission anyway is where we need to look at in security, because we're waiting around for some program to build this, and we're already walking around.
That whole mission focus is why they like ex-service personnel. It's why they like people who are on the fringes of society, because these people will knuckle down and they will see the thing through. But it's also the thing that brings us the mental health challenge, because having put those people in that, they're very focused, they're very locked into what they're doing. We need at some point to start backtracking some of this. How do we backtrack it?
I got a talk coming up on a lot of this stuff. Why are we burning out? Why are 38% of us quitting? Which is terrible. I think we're not rotating enough people. One of the things that I've heard that's kind of working and equaling employees staying and retaining longer is don't leave them in a room by themselves for too long. Looking at what law enforcement is doing, the states, they unfortunately, we've got a lot of mass incidents. Even being aware that after an incident, whether it's a cyber incident, a physical world incident, your team needs a break. Your incident response team probably just pulled 23-hour days for a sustained amount of time. That's not humanly possible to do. Expecting that same group of people to then go into a meeting at 8 a.m., be very cordial to other folks. No, they need a break. The leadership of security programs and the leaders that we're building, they just need to be mindful that you can't run at that sustained. I don't care what job field you're in. Looking at other areas that we don't and learning from them. It's been interesting doing research when you look at women firefighters versus male firefighters. They have lower alcoholism rates, lower smoking rates. Nursing, same thing. Even in emergency rooms. Well, why is that? They create tribes. They talk to each other. They commiserate. They joke. They do those things. And guys have a tendency not to do that. So I always say, if for no other reason than you care about your mental health, we should probably get way more diverse in security. So I don't have all the answers, but I think those conversations lead to what are areas that we can learn from other folks and adopt.
I drew some flak earlier this year at a conference when I suggested that one of the things we've got to be careful of is if I was to look at people monitoring the internet for child pornography or extreme violence, we would say to them, you can only do this job for a short period of time, then we've got to pull you out and we've got to give you counselling. When I look at SOC teams and I look at red teams, nobody makes that same correlation, yet actually that intensity of what people are doing is no different. Obviously, what they're dealing with is different, but there has to be a recognition, surely, that we've got to start saying, where's our mental health policy as a company and who really needs it?
Even for me, I didn't like talking to HR. I was like, oh, HR is the place you go to get fired. Even working with my HR partners to understand those types of things. There are reasons bosses should allow for mental health days. I've certainly been very lucky because I've gotten to have those conversations. And sometimes you just call and say, if I come in today, it's going to be a bad day, which is tough. I mean, we all want to produce. We all want to execute. We all want to do those things. To your earlier point about veterans being attracted to cybersecurity and vice versa, yeah, that same mindset is very detrimental after a while because you beat yourself up even worse when you don't execute or the way it was in the Marines. Well, if you pull up lame, you can't contribute to your unit. You can't contribute to unit, then you're useless. Even better transition programs out of the services would be helpful. Certainly bringing some of those folks into our programs to talk to our teams as well.
We're seeing those transition programs when we start to look at attracting people with autism into this industry. And there's been a lot of focus on that here in the UK in particular.
The UK is leading that, which is fantastic because I have a godson who has autism. Yeah, that's awesome.
But it, as you say, it misses that veteran community. Is this something that, in your case, the VA, we don't have quite the equivalent here in the UK. Is this something where we should be pressuring them to understand? Because we've got a lot of job providers who want to put vets in jobs, but they see their job simply as commodity fill.
I'll go through my personal experience and my family's experience with the VA. Lots of my family has served, every guy, since World War I. It's a long time, but my uncle's after Vietnam. I got to observe that behavior. What happens when there's no programs? That's not good. So I would say at least we've improved since Afghanistan and Iraq, but folks in my company, like former Marines, former Army, they were denied certain services because, well, we just don't think your problem's big enough. And so in particular to one of my mentorees, he just started showing up to group meetings. And the doctor who was facilitating the group meetings was like, why are you here? You don't have a diagnosis of PTSD. And then he explained the issues and he goes, we messed up. So look, the VA is not perfect. We have a lot of issues, but they're at least trying to address the problem. I think what we need to do is have a bigger outreach with the civilians that are out there and the family members. How do you even deal with, sometimes you just get buggy. And so I think dealing with that, maybe a better education in the public besides what you see in movies, because half the time it's complete bullshit, what you see in movies. It's not symptomatic in that particular way, but it shows up in all kinds of random ways for each individual, because the interesting thing about any trauma is that it's individualistic to your brain, and each brain is different. So the way you deal with that isn't a prescribed singular set of medicine. It's just figure out what works for you. But if we can start to bridge those two gaps, like, that's going to help.
I do rugby with the Combined Service Barbarians, and it's a mix of still serving members of the armed forces, veterans, and some service family personnel. And our focus has been on how do we raise mental health awareness. And very early on, I think it was after our second game, I was talking to somebody and saying, yeah, you know, well, when I've had enough of people, I get in my van and I go and disappear for 2 days.
I'm doing the same thing. I've been on the road for a while. Yeah, I'm disappearing.
Absolutely. In the US, I'm off into the desert and the mountains, and I got called on it. You're not dealing with it. I said, no, but I'm coping with it.
Yeah, but I think that's fair. There's a long-term trip, but then you need some short-term abatement sometimes. And sometimes it's just a matter of it's too many inputs. I can certainly tell you, being on planes as much as I am, I've had to work really hard at it. I think it was easier because someone was paying me to do it. I think I treated it a little bit more like I have to be better at it just because it's got to facilitate my gig. But even sometimes just people bumping up against you, you're like, whoa, whether that's a two-minute break, a five-minute break. So look, if you're managing some of these folks, the stories I hate to hear when it's brought up and then the manager doesn't get it. If you're going to manage anybody, you got to look at each individual differently. You're going to have to manage them differently. You're going to have to lead them differently. And you're going to have to allow some room for flexibility and unique to just veterans. I mean, we've got law enforcers that are coming in that do incident response, that do forensics. There's a lot of women in the industry that have clearly been traumatized. Just being aware of the individual and some of the things that they're going to need, that's how you retain employees. That's how you keep them around.
We've talked a lot about veterans here, but as you and I know, this is not just veterans. This is the wider industry. We've got some big industry bodies out there, and they're not really addressing it. They occasionally make a press release or they make a statement at the show. How do we pressure these people to lead? Because they want to be the industry body that everybody gets accredited by, but they don't really want to touch this because it's, I don't know, maybe because they think it will infect them with something.
Yeah, well, see, that's why I love hackers, because they just started doing it. If you look at mental health hackers or any of the groups at DEF CON, they just submitted talks. And if they're cool enough talks, they did it. But then what you saw is Black Hat instantly picked it up. RSA instantly picked it up. So now I think the community pressure to do it. And then I would say in large part, I would credit the women in the industry coming in that have helped drive that too. No one's going to fix it but us. And so it's incumbent on us to speak up about it, to demand that there are sessions on it. And then I'm happy to see that generally speaking, there's at least a session on some sort of burnout or stress, or the World Health Organization says it's like one of the number one things now. People used to think it was exclusive to vets and law enforcement and firefighters, and we're starting to realize that no, it's not. It happens all the time, and it's in all these different pockets of people.
There's also a slightly interesting thing here, isn't it? Because we're focusing on what we do all the time, but this is a society problem.
In America, we got symptoms all over the place, whether that's people who go grab a gun, you know, whatever it is. We got some mental health issues, but one of the areas I think we've improved as Americans is we used to be really obese and diabetes rates and heart attacks, and we've made a lot of progress with the next generation. Like, my son exercises all the time, and it's not because he has to. It's just part of the lifestyle and the way we raised him. That's what we got to do, is bring that conversation down to K through 12 a little bit. Leave it, help guide the kids in the groups, because certainly as a teenager today, that's a traumatic experience anyway. Helping out that next generation and getting them to start to stand up and lead their peer groups is going to help too.
One thing I'm hopeful of is we've seen the millennials come in, and they've absolutely driven the agenda around gender issues. They've driven that agenda around equal pay and equality and acceptance of people. They haven't quite yet cottoned on to there's another agenda here that they could really drive. Because let's be honest, they're going to be the people in this workplace for the next 30, 40, 50 years dealing with this.
Yeah, for sure. Look, we're in America. There's a lot of traumatic stuff going on for them. They're still looking at it as like a point problem. We got to go back to the root cause. Then the symptoms, I think, will start to abate. But until we get to that root cause, there's just a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, a lot of depression. And that's the root cause of it, I think. Then we can start to help the symptoms. But the symptoms are only going to get worse in the meantime. And they're going to have to do it, because I can assure you, the older generation, they just seem to be too slow to adapt and just want to do the same stuff over and over again. I know people pick on millennials a lot, but I am a huge fan of their ability to go, nah, we're just going to try something different. And I think it's needed. Yeah.
Rick, thanks for talking with us.
As always, dude. Thank you for having me back. And I always appreciate folks in the community, especially in the press, that are out there talking about it. Because generally, we just talk about the fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And you know me, I don't like to do that. So thanks again.